This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations. Recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today I have with me
Trisha Keeler.
And I am Alison Milden. The interview today was to talk about Karcher Birch.
Yes.
Perhaps Trisha,
yes,
you would like to tell us your association with this property.
Well, I'm a member of the Trust Board, the Karcher Birch Trust Board, appointed by the City Council. And my interest in becoming a member was because my great aunt, Maud, she was Maud Keeler, married William Karcher Birch in 1897. And so I'm interested in family history. So it was just an extension of that interest that I was invited onto the board.
And perhaps if you could just tell us what Karcher Birch is.
It's an historic house with a Category A heritage category. It's used for events, it's used for meetings, it's used for weddings. It has, because of the trust deed, it has a community interest in having open days for the public to come through, and it has, and we have special rates for community non-profit organisations to be able to use it. But on the whole, we try to make it, rent out the rooms and make it a viable concern to maintain it in the high standard in which it is kept.
So it's a great public asset.
Yes.
Yes. Now, I'm aware of the fact that there has been a development on site that was perhaps to make some of the history of the building and grounds and its earlier history more accessible to the public. Mm. And this is a development that's ongoing?
Yes.
Yeah.
You're talking about the Coach House, yes, archive. Yes, and we because of its early history in this area of Palmerston North, being the first major house and historic home, it was in Palmerston North. So we've started on this project in the Coach House with a prehistory, Māori, pre-European history, and from there we'll go through to the European section of the coming of the settlers, and then the third phase is to look at the owners of the house and give background to the to their ownership and what their background and interest was in living in the house.
Obviously then, because of your real personal history and interest, that in fact is a bit of a speciality for you, and maybe you'd just like to talk on that subject. Right. I don't know if you want to go back as far as pre-European history, just to touch on that.
Yeah, well, I'll just touch a little bit about the area, because it was Rangitāne area, Rangitāne iwi, and they had And in the 1890s, the government was had preemptive rights on the ownership of the land and on the sale of the land. And this meant that they had to, most people buying the land had to buy through the government. But every now and again, these preemptive rights were relaxed, which meant that speculators and private ownership was allowed, so with direct negotiation with Māori. This meant that it was at this time that the Norwegian sawmilling company of Richter, Nannestad and Jensen were able to lease the land, and then a bit further on they were able to buy the land in this area of the Hokowhetu.
Can you perhaps give some rough idea of the... obviously we're in the middle of an urban area now, so...
Yeah, the original area was about 890 acres, which the Nannestad company, they first milled the big trees, and in their first block that they leased, and then later, as they milled the other big trees in the other blocks, they gave a tithe to the Māori owners. But once they'd bought the land, they could then just set up their sawmills. They also, the Richter Company, Nannestad Company, they also built a flour mill, so they were very good for the area, because they did provide these other facilities for entrepreneurship in the area. And but as they cleared the land, the Nannestad realised that there was a nice area there that was a little bit on a rise. So in 1890, they had the land by 1892, and in 1895 they started building the house on this little bit of a knoll, which was up above the Hokowhetu Lagoon, and that was part of their property. And the architect, they used a Danish architect originally to build the house. They lived in it until about 1900, 1902, because by that time they milled all the timber, and their business was actually going down because there was no more timber to mill. So the land, 11 and a half acres, including the lagoon, was sold to the Strang family, John Strang, and they were a farming family on the Arua, in the Arua area, on the Foxton Shannon area in there road, and they were keen horsemen and polo players. So when they bought here, the polo grounds actually were across the lagoon in that area that's now next door to the Hokowhetu golf course. And that was a polo ground, and beside that was the rifle range, because they used the escarpment on Te Motu or Potoa, the Anzac Park. They used that escarpment there as the backdrop for the rifle range.
Oh my goodness.
so there was quite a lot of activity down there. But when the Strangs moved to the house, of course they had their horses, so they built a stable for their horses and a small cottage for the groom attached to it. So that's when the coach house was begun, in about 1905. Also around that time they put on the two conservatories on either side of the front door of the house. So that was there. From the Strangs' point of view, they were English in background. John Strang was English. His three sons were born in New Zealand, I think. And around 1907, there was a fire in Parliament, in Parliament buildings, and Parliament needed to sit. So it took over Government House in Wellington. And so the Governor-General had to go somewhere, and it was decided that he would come up here to Palmerston North and take up residence in the Strang household. At this stage, the house was called Wood Hay, after the Strang family home in England. So for the Governor-General to come here, about 1907, he wanted a billiard room. So the back of the house was built on as a billiard room, and that's now called the Lord Plunkett Room. And around in the grounds, an asphalt tennis court was built, and there were a number of other buildings which have since gone, which to house, the entourage of the Governor-General. At that stage, the land went right out to Te Awiawi Street, and I can remember, as you went down Te Awiawi Street and the entrance, which is where the driveway comes in now, the iron fence, there were two little arc parts of the fence at either side of the gateway, because that's where the sentry boxes were set in there.
So that was specifically because the Governor-General
was there. And it's really quite interesting now, because where the gateway has been moved back just to the entrance of the actual property, it does own that driveway as well, but there was a little arc movement of the arc of the fence, the iron fence, goes around two trees, and it always amuses me, and I'm thinking those two trees are two sentry boxes.
So that was on Te Awiawi Street.
But the original fence line was along Te Awiawi Street. Yeah. Later, that area there was sold to Ryder Cheshire to help with the renovations and repairs of the house itself. So the council sold that later on, but that's much later in the story.
Yeah.
After the... and then the Governor-General was going... And in the meantime, while the Governor-General was here in Palmerston North, the Strangs went to England and went to live with their family in England. They came back in 1910 when the Governor-General moved back to Wellington, and they lived in the house and had their polo, but they still maintained their farm in the Arua area. And so they obviously travelled backwards and forwards. But in 1921, sold Wood Hay, which is now known as the Karcher Birch property, to William Karcher Birch. He maintained the name Wood Hay, and the family today, the descendants of William and Maud, they actually still like to call it Wood Hay, so it's quite interesting. Anyway, they were there until used it as a family home. They had three sons who they brought up there, and then they went their way. And in 1936, William died, and Maud really wanted to move to Marton, to where one of her sons was now living and farming, and actually a second son also was farming in the area. So she really wanted to move back there, and so she moved quite quickly after William's death. And bought a property and built a house on it. So she was happy with that. At that stage, they tried to sell the executors of the Williams will estate, tried to sell the property, and it was split up into subdivisions. But it was sort of late 1930s, and war was sort of feeling in people's head, and they'd come through a depression. There wasn't that much money around, and so well, the odd sort of people looked at it, but few looked at it, but they weren't interested. They just didn't have the money, not even the sections. So in the end, Maud decided that the war was declared, and she decided that she would donate the property to the government to be used in the war effort.
Can you then describe the area that consisted of?
That was, it was 11 acres. But she, at that point, I think the Palmerston North City Council, well, it was, I think it was the Borough Council at that stage, was interested in buying the lagoon in order to use it for recreation and to, it was attached to a reserve area, and they wanted to include it part of that reserve. So they bought the lagoon and a strip of land on the house, the Couchbert, you know, the Woodhay house side of the, just the embankment along the edge of the lagoon. And of course it was then part of that reserve that they had on the other side. That meant that the property was then 8.5 acres. So it was then the 8.5 acres that was up for sale. The government decided that they would use it. It was as for the army. So the Defence Force, the army, New Zealand Army Defence Force, took it over. They had to do a little bit to it. There was some repairs needed, like repiling and a re-roofing, re-guttering, a few things, because there hadn't been very much money to come in and do those things, and beforehand with the Depression and wool, the price of wool from the Karcherbirch properties wasn't very high, and so they didn't have much income at that point. But anyway, the army took it over, and it was the Home Guard headquarters, as well as the officers' accommodation. And there were all sorts of extra buildings built on it around for the officers' accommodation. And it stayed like that for the rest of the war. In 1945, it was returned to the government from the army, and the it was then used as a convalescent home for nurses returning from war service who needed some a bit of rest and recreation, or bit of, yes, and they and there was an interesting story where there was a swimming pool put in the courtyard area, and of course the nurses used to sort of, you know, lots of recreation, and they used to go skinny dipping at night. But one of them coming back late at night in a taxi, the taxi lights caught somebody just about to dive into the pool, about to go skinny dipping. Delightful story. Anyway, then it became just a rest home for a while, but the more and more it was appreciated that it was a fire risk, and elderly patients or residents would have difficulty getting out in a fire. So that was run down, and about that time Victoria University wanted to set up a university college up here. So the house was used while they started to develop the Hokowhitu campus. And then that was developed into the training college. In the meantime, the house was used for a library, it was used for extension courses, and it did house students too for some time.
Even I remember that.
Yes. So they had a lot of fun, I think. it went on being, once the Hokowhitu campus was complete, as a training, as a teacher's college, and Massey was become a university, it was still used by Victoria as for extension courses, and that went right on till about 1976, I think. And then that was, then it was sort of empty. And it wasn't until the 1980s that it was looked at, and it was decided by the government to sell it to the Palmerston North City Council for 10 cents.
So this is the entire property?
At this stage it was still, yes, I think it was still the entire property at this stage. Right. But the council then used the use of it. The sale of 10 cents to the city council was that they maintain it as a community facility. But they were allowed to sell a certain number of sections in order to maintain it. And so the Ryder Cheshire property was developed, and along the Karchabirch Lane, properties along that section there was also sold, and the money used for the upkeep, maintenance and renovation of the entire house.
So would that be just as a one-off, or was the money put into some kind of trust for ongoing?
It was to go be kept by the city council for the use of the house, but at that point, the 1980s, a trust board was formed. 1983, I think it is. A trust board was formed, and the trust board decided that they would hold the money in their own trust account in order to be used for maintenance and upkeep of the property.
Ongoing.
Yes. And so for a long time, in the finances of the trust board, there was this section which was specifically allocated and targeted for special projects within the house itself. And grounds.
Did that continue, or has there been some change?
Yes, the last piece of property that the money was used was a small bit of land attached to the last house on the lagoon down at the end of Karchabirch Lane, and the occupants there wanted to take that bit of extra land to make into their garden right down to the edge of the lagoon. Originally there was a pathway along there, but that was bought, and so the pathway was stopped. And it was that money that was maintained that in the accounts of the trust board to redo the upstairs room called the Athena room, and that was then used, and finally that was done, and we took out a wall or changed a wall and made that room into a much more usable and an attractive room to use, and could take a larger number of people for weddings or for birthday parties or for parties or whatever, for dinners and things upstairs.
So basically then there's no pool of money. What you have to use now for maintenance, etc., has to be self-funding, or?
Well, we get a grant from the council every year, and that pays for the manager's salary, and it also pays for for other parts of the maintenance. But we're also quite lucky in that there are some parts of it, because it is owned by the council, so there are certain, the council has properties they have that they have to look after, and there are certain things that they have to we've gone over. And there are certain objectives that they have to maintain within their properties. And some of it is maintenance work. So certain maintenance work, which is what the council will do for any property in Palmerston North that they own, and so we get that help as well. But actually, in itself, in the for the rent of the rooms, the hire of the rooms, the house just maintains itself with that little bit of commercial use.
Right, I think we might just about have come to the end of this section. So I, in fact, would be very interested to hear more about the Cudgee Birch family time here, but we can't do it within this particular time frame. So thank you very much, Tricia.
Yeah,
very
right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.